Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing founder, you know, a founder that has done it, you know, a few times. Right now he's on a rocket ship and many lessons learned along the way. But again, we're going to be talking about raising money in tough environments, whether it is the market or whether it is, you know, what we experienced with COVID. Growing also outside of perhaps your region, right? Like exploring other markets and how tough that could be, as well as timing the market and leadership, no? Leadership where now, you know, you're growing, the company is growing, and it's time to start coaching, tutoring, mentoring, you know, other folks within your organization so that you're able to somehow replicate yourself, which is definitely a really tough transition to do, no? When you're going from early to growth. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, and that is Thomas Laurent. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me, Alessandro.
So originally born in Lyon, in France. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
I think a good, you know, good childhood. I was fortunate to grow up in a good family, good place in France. So yeah, good education. I spent almost 20 years in Lyon. Great city, by the way, for any people going to France. Definitely recommend. I then started my, you know, university and then college degree in business school. So I went to Paris, like probably every French people has a period in their life where they go to Paris for whatever reason. So like everybody else, yeah, spent time there for a while.
And what about business? You know, what really piqued your attention about business, entrepreneurship? What really got you hooked to that?
I think, you know, it was a lot of things around people you meet in your own life. Have some influence. And for me, I think it was a philosophy teacher in high school. So I was good in mathematics, but I was not too bad in philosophy with that particular professor. And it was the one that said, you know, instead of going into like pure scientific trainings after that, maybe you should consider something a bit more generalized and why not go for business schools? So I followed the advice. And I think, you know, if I look backwards, I consider myself as a good generalist. So I like to understand and tap into different fields. I like, you know, science. I'm in a deep tech company now, but I like psychology and HR and communication. So I like to touch on multiple things, but not, you know, to the point of like deep diving into one specific topic, like a scientific career or something like that. But I think that was well suited for me. Like business school, you cover a lot of stuff through business. So yeah, so I did that. I joined a business school called ESSEC Business School in France doing a long time ago, 2003, 2006.
Now, what one thing that is that I see happening is that you go to business school and then, you know, you have a couple of or a bunch of classmates that decide to, you know, really go at it and start their own business. I mean, in your case, you thought that going the consulting route, you know, would be probably a more ideal approach for you. And you did that for 4 years. So out of all things, consulting, why consulting?
Yeah, I think it was, again, second, I think key person I met, there was an entrepreneurship course in ESSEC Business School that I loved. And it was different talks, you know, and, you know, the welcome guests who had, like, built their company, successful exit. So, yeah, and you have, like, stars in your eyes and you think, okay, I'd like to do that. But, you know, there was a bit of, let's say, risk adverse insecurity about, okay, where should I start? What should I start? It was back in 2006, 2007. So I think the startup environment was not as mature as it is today. And one of the person that came said that, that person had started his career into consulting before launching a business. And I thought, okay, maybe that's the safest route. So I said, okay, I'll go into consulting for a while. I'll train, I'll learn, I'll gain, you know, some money and I'll be, you know, taught a lot of, you know, practical thing that could be helpful for a startup journey after that. That's exactly what I did. So yeah, I joined a consulting firm, worked 4 years, learned a lot. It's basically the professional business school after the business school. Helped me, you know, doing market research, calling people out of the blue to gather market information, doing financial modeling to, you know, think of business plans, type of skills.
But yeah, what about problem solving too? What about problem solving too? Like how, what really gave you access to in terms of problem solving, like being able to see so many companies, so many strategic issues, so many problems. What did that unlock for you that maybe, you know, you're using today as a framework for problem solving?
Yeah, I think I developed a few skills that we did. So one is, pretty analytical. So you look at any situation, any problem, and you try to boil it down to a sub-component that are easier to grasp. So whatever the big issue is, whether it's, you know, raising fund or, you know, launching a product, the more information you gather and your ability to classify those information and break that from into smaller pieces is definitely helpful. And you're taught to do that a lot when you're doing consulting. The other one I think was really helpful to me is the ability to synthesize complex problem into a couple of slides, like visual presentation that are easy to grasp. Really to simplify a problem. And I think I'm using that a lot in my job today. And I would say, let's say, hardcore skills that are still very useful to me, and you know, the team is joking about that. Yeah, financial modeling. I'm playing a lot with Excel spreadsheets, and although it doesn't sound fun, it's really helpful, especially as a founder. And also PowerPoint. I'm a PowerPoint geek. I think I've been burnt with making slides fit the same format for 4 years. And I think investors recognize that in the job we're doing.
So once you did your stint at Daily K, you decided to go at it as an entrepreneur. And you decided to go at it with your father-in-law, out of all people. I mean, that's quite courageous.
Yeah. I think, you know, there are a few things that the professor I mentioned in entrepreneurship said that I did not respect. One was, do not start a business with your family. And the first thing I did after consulting was actually do that with someone from my family. But it was a ton of even. So at that time, so it was 2012. So we were living in Paris. My future wife was finishing her PhD degree. And her father was an inventor. He invents a lot of different stuff. He had invented a prototype for a small wind turbine concept. But he had difficulties to, you know, pitch that project, explain it, to gather a bit of funding. And at that time, I was also a bit, you know, tired of the consulting world, you know. I've done a lot of it, and I wanted to get out. So it was a good opportunity, although there were some risks. I think the major success in that experience is that, well, we did get a bit of funding to build a prototype. But more importantly, I'm seeing very good terms with my father-in-law. I think that was probably objective number one in that future.
So obviously, as they say, you either succeed or you learn. So what was the lesson to be learned out of that stint?
Yeah, so for this one, I think it was the balance between, you know, it was kind of a deep tech project and capital intensive. You do not launch a wind turbine manufacturing company without funding. So you need to have a product concept, you know, IP patents that are strong, but also you need a market traction that makes it, you know, relatively easy to raise that type of funding. And unfortunately for us, there had been a few startups raising capital in the small wind turbine industry in France, and none of them were successful. Was a lot of, you know, company filing for bankruptcy, and they raised a bit of funding, but none of them really emerged. And one of the reasons why was around regulation. There was no like good incentive for anybody, customers, to buy small wind turbines. It was much more into solar panel, for instance. So understanding that and taking the time to learn about the market conditions and see how you can fit. In that case, we did not fit. It was a good learning. Like, you need not only a good idea, but you need the market to be around and be there so that you can fit.
So after this, you decided to go at it again. Now, in this case, you know, the lesson learned was, you know, alignment with co-founders. So talk to us about this, and then most importantly, about the lesson around co-founder alignment that you took away, you know, with you from that.
Yeah. So as that, you know, wind turbine project started to close and shut down. So I was still in Toulouse and looking for, you know, different startups ideas. And one that I got was to work on the urban farming. And then I met a potential co-founder through a network. So I met a young graduate from undergrad, but the guy was probably 4 or 5 years younger than I, but with the same idea. And so we thought, instead of doing two similar projects in the same small town, let's work together on that. And so for this one, it was a bit less, you know, business planning, and it was more, let's go with the flow and try a few ideas, test, learn, and repeat. And the other co-founders did quite a good job at doing certain things. But at some point, so we welcome a third associate because we're two people from a business background, and we obviously needed an agronomy call, someone with agronomy in the background. So we become a third co-founder And after six, seven months, we had the conversation around equity splits to welcome the other co-founders. And of course, their vision was, you know, even split. I was not really into that, mostly because I had funded like 100% of the initiation of the project. I think more importantly, behind that, there was definitely, a different vision of what to build. And I was more into thinking of developing a concept that could be scaled and reproduced, you know, starting in one small, you know, city in France, Toulouse, but potentially something that could grow and, you know, be replicated in different cities in France. And I think they were more into, which is great, by the way, as well. You know, it's just a different vision, having a really local supplier of, you know, city grown foods for restaurants, but not something that could scale. It was really around production. And so what I did is that at some point my wife convinced me, okay, it's time for you to, you know, pull out and do something else, which I did, which simplified the life. So the company still exists. I think, you know, doing that helped the other founders to, because they were more aligned, to find their way and continue developing that company. They paid me back 100% eventually, so I did not lose money. I think that was the right decision to just let these guys go with their own vision, which was different than mine, but was still valid. So yeah, so second experience.
Second experience. So obviously for you, you know, you ended up joining Green Technologies, and basically there, it was ultimately the segue into you developing, you know, what is now MicroPrep Technologies, which is, you know, quite different to the other, you know, two experiences in venture. So how did, you know, ultimately the journey of getting into being an employee, you know, lead you back into starting now what is your baby that is doing quite well?
Yeah. So I joined that tech transfer office in 2014. So there was a good, you know, stability for a while. What I liked was it was a good observer position for new technologies developing big laboratories in France. That gave me a good exposure to IP, patents, these type of assets that are different to sell than a product. And this is how I met the scientific co-founders of MicroPrep. So I was focusing on green technologies, as you mentioned. And so Jean-Philippe and Dominique, my two scientific founders, they had discovered a family of small proteins that could be used for crop protection. And again, I think I was there at the right time at the right moment. So I think end of 2015, there was a conversation around that tech transfer office for which I worked about putting the IP, the different patents that were filed on this new technology in a startup company. So Jean-Philippe and Dominique were pretty excited, but not as much as to leave the university. It was more, okay, we'll help the startup, but they needed someone to be the first and take some risk and kick off the project. And for many reasons, it was a good time for me to go back again. I did that once, you know, I quit consulting to give a first shot. I wasn't that afraid to do that a second time. I had some lesson learned from the first time. And for this particular experience, the IP was stronger, the market potential was bigger, and we had a better alignment from the very early days with the other founders. So I gave it a go and we started MicroPrep in 2016.
Yeah. Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So With that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So let's say, talk about it now, you know, for the people that are listening, what ended up being the business model of MicroPrep Technologies? How do you guys make money?
Well, we're really a biotech type of company. So we're developing, you know, drugs, let's call it that way, for plants. So we're looking for alternatives to pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, and other stuff. So this type of project, they requires a long time of R&D before being commercialized. That's the first thing to keep in mind. So for us, it takes more than 10 years from ID to market approval. You cannot sell a fungicide product to a farmer just like that. You need, you know, the regulatory bodies to approve the sale of your active ingredient in your products before you can make money. So we really went for a biotech business model. I think the assets we have developed are two ways. First, we have a proprietary discovery platform. So with the knowledge we've built into that specific space, we can find different active ingredients, and we're partnering with established companies and R&D organizations to work with them so that we can develop products for them. So that's the first business model. And on top of that platform, we have our first product, our first active ingredient that we are pushing through the market. And that was very important and is still, you know, ongoing, but it's very important because it's kind of validates the platform potential. So yeah, referring that to fundraising and to what we're doing, that's the key things. First of all, we are kind of a biotech company, so you need a lot of capital before actually selling your first product.
So at what point do you guys experience that the moment where you're like, hey, I think that this time around, this third go at it, it feels different. It feels like we're into something.
Yeah. To me, so there were different phases in the company journey. So we did our seed round in 2018. So 4 million was basically nothing in the company. There was the IP, me, and my co-founders. But we had no employees, no results. So we did a very interesting seed round with a local fund from Toulouse and a big fund from Europe called Sofinnova Partner, a big biotech fund. And to me, that first phase really helped, like the first layer of the foundation of the company on, you know, discovery. So the Discovery platform. During our Series A, we raised our Series A just during and after COVID in 2021. It was to translate that to the first product. I think a big moment for us was around our manufacturing process. So I mentioned we're doing biotech, but for agriculture. So we're working on small proteins, and you have tons of companies doing small proteins for different fields, a lot in pharmaceuticals. The thing is, when you're in agriculture, the end customer doesn't have the money that other people have in pharma and things like that. So the cost of goods is kind of a top priority if you think you can launch a product. And so we had invested in discovering a manufacturing, you know, system that fitted our technology that could provide something relatively cheap with good quality. And that moment came somehow mid Series A where I thought, okay, we're really onto something with that manufacturing process. We can see a potential cost of goods target that is kind of unlocking the go-to-market, the market access, and things like that. So I would say to me, that's a big one.
So when it comes to raising money, to how much capital have you guys raised to date?
60 million so far through seed to Series B more recently.
And how was the experience of going through the cycles to raising money? Because also you guys have had the opportunity of raising in tough environments as well.
Yeah, so like, I like to joke about that with some of the investors. Like, I always pick the worst moment in history to raise capital. So seed was okay, but then, you know, Series A, we started during COVID. So actually, I was meant to fly to San Francisco on March 2020 to meet, like, you know, 20 investors during a face-to-face event. And of course, you know, the world shut down at that time. So I transitioned to Zoom calls and Teams meeting late at night from friends, and I was tough. Like everybody, you know, everybody was okay. What's going on? How do we survive? So raising capital was tough. We managed to do that for a year. So we closed the first round, Series A round in 2021. Where we got, you know, I think relatively lucky and good is we managed to extend that Series A in 2022 with a follow-on investment from another US fund, Fulham Capital. But yeah, this one was tough. In 2024, that Series B was also quite difficult. There was a lot of, you know, the financial market was down, especially for biotech and also especially in ag. There were still some investors writing smaller checks, so seed, pre-seed, seed funding. But we were at a stage where Series B started to be a bit, you know, big. I think in both cases, well, I think we did a good job at explaining how different we were, what's the vision and strategy, and why we could succeed. But also, I think we did a first close, took the money that was there, and then expanded with a second close. So that's what we've done. We've done this year. We did a first close around June and a second in summer. So we took the money that was there, secured the first investors that believed, even though, you know, the amount was might be a bit smaller than what we had looking for. Then we could welcome follow-on investors and end up oversubscribing the round compared to what we had in mind.
And when it comes to capital raising, I mean, what is your biggest take of being able to run a streamlined and effective process for the folks that are listening?
Yeah, I think to me there's one big piece around the equity story, that's definitely unique to your industry. So I spend a lot of time talking to investors, obviously looking at the market and trying to understand, okay, what are the exit potential? What the exit potential looks like in our space? Who could acquire us? What's the IPO market? Is there any rollout, private equity play? What are the numbers we're talking about? You know, I mentioned in my education, mathematics, philosophy, I like to play with numbers. And I think knowing your numbers is very important because you need to know how your investors are thinking. So if you come and say, yeah, I'm going to have a $2 billion valuation in 3 years, but it has never been done before, ever in ag, and the best you've seen in exit was $400 million. You need to have a very, very strong, convincing story. And I'm not saying it's impossible, but then you need to come back to, okay, what's sustaining your claims of having it to be an exit. So I think that's the first one, is really understand your industry, understand what others have done before, what mistakes they made, or can you be different, and make it your own in the story you pitch to investors. So that's, yeah, that's one.
So talk to us too about the, you know, growth. I mean, right now you have about 55 employees and you've also been growing, you know, in different markets. So what kind of lessons have you taken along the way of maybe like developing a playbook or something to be able to replicate what you're doing in different locations?
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't have the playbook yet, but I'm spending a lot of time to think about it. But yeah, so, you know, story. So we started in France, so as I mentioned, so the first core team is in France. And for many reasons, it was clear from day one that we needed to expand in other countries than Europe. And one of the most important reasons is because of regulatory. I mentioned biotech takes a long time. It's taking longer in Europe than in other parts of the world. So it was clear if we wanted to sell a product, we needed to go in US or Latin America. So we made that decision to move in 2022. So I moved first. And we started to recruit people in the US. So now we are more like 10, 15 in the US. And it's still a big portion of the company in France. And this is where you work on two time zones. We're not a fully remote company. You know, we're not in software development where, you know, it's part of sometimes the culture of, you know, doing pieces of work remotely. Most of our people are in the lab. So they need to be there, you know, physically and do experiments. And we had to go through that shift of culture, like everybody's at this one place, having the information at the same time to two different time zones, different managers, different culture, communication means, and it's not easy. And we're still walking through that. So I don't have the playbook of, yeah, sure, it's done and everything is flawless. But I think it requires a lot of more thinking in terms of how you organize your day, your months, your quarters, how you work with your team, who's talking. I mean, there's a lot of work to be put into that.
So for you also, you know, we're talking about scaling and growth. Let's talk about leadership. You know, how do you think about that moment where, hey, we've been building the pipes, you know, like we've been doing everything ourselves, like especially myself as the co-founder and CEO of the company. Now, if we want to scale, we got to get other people and also more importantly, coach them and mentor them so that I'm replicating myself somehow. So how does that work and what have you learned from that?
Yeah, I think it's. You know, it's necessary and it's scary at the same time. So when you're a founder and you started everything from scratch, you're pretty hands-on. And, you know, growing from zero to 50 plus, you go through different stages. And very early on, you roll up your sleeve and you do stuff. You have to do a bit of everything. And this is how you survive, you know, during the first phases, you know, you're tackling every subject and you're very present. But after a while, first of all, you have more means, so you can recruit like more experienced people than you, and that's a good thing. But then you need to let go. And sometimes it's hard to let go on stuff. You need to learn about yourself, or what should I let go and how to let go. So I think it took me quite some time to process that. I think I'm getting better at it. I'm not saying I'm the best at it. Definitely sometimes I pick up topics and I want to say, yeah, I should have let them do it on their own. So there's really a transition between being hands-on, finding the directions and almost, you know, should do this, do that, etc. to, all right, this is where we want to go. These are the top objectives. Now go and do it. Find a way to do it and ask me if you need help. So try to position yourself more on the, you know, the back seat, more as a coach on the bench rather than, you know, being an active player on the field. And it's really a mindset, and it goes with growth because you get people that are experienced, so you can trust people to, you know, take over some pieces of the work. But it's also reinventing yourself, because if you're known for, you know, at first you do the first deals, then you have a chief business officer. So you need to accept that someone is going to do that much better than you. And so you think, okay, what am I useful for? What's my skills and what am I bringing? So a lot of processing.
So now with, investors, employees, you know, growing customers, I guess the question that comes to mind is, if you were to go to sleep tonight, Thomas, and you wake up in a world where the vision of MicroPrep is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Yeah, to me, the main driver behind that company, that project, is to have an impact, a positive impact on the environment and through agriculture and the way farmers are growing their crop. So I have two kids, you know, and of course I'm thinking about the state of the world when they're going to be 30 years old, and with climate change and everything we've seen, yeah, we know it's going to be a tough world. So what we're trying to do with MicroPrep is to help farmers protect their crop with products that are better for the environment and for their health. So I hope that we are going to contribute massively to that crop protection industry, that raw ingredients are going to be used in many products, and that farmers, not only in the rich developed countries, but also across the world, will be able to buy solutions with our products. Hopefully that will reduce, you know, problem of synthetic, you know, chemistry in water runoffs, in consumer products, and reduce the health risk, improve soil health, etc., etc. So that's really the key driver behind what we're doing.
So obviously now, you know, with all these companies that you've, you know, created and now with the experience that you're obtaining too with MicroPrep Technologies and the nice, you know, success that you're experiencing, let's put you into a time machine and let's bring you back in time. You know, maybe to that moment in time where you were thinking about starting a company of your own, you know, that moment where you were, let's say, coming out of consulting, of LEK. And let's say you're right there at that spot, you know, when you're coming out of the office building, you know, after giving your notice, and you're able to stop that younger Thomas and give that younger Thomas one piece of advice before entering the venture world and launching a business. What would that piece of advice be, and why, given what you know now?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think this is what I try to do. I think I would say enjoy the process. And it's something I realized, you know, startups and starting a business is a lot of ups and downs. And when you look from the outside, you just see the press release of the ups. So you look, sometimes you look at companies and say, oh, they're always great. But when you're doing things from the inside, there's a lot of ups and downs all the time. And there are things that work, things that doesn't, you know. And I think if you don't enjoy the process, so if you think, okay, I just want the goal, I just want the big funding or the big exits, and you hate the process, you're never going to go very far. So you need to really to enjoy and find ways to enjoy even the struggles. But it's a lot about, you know, connecting with the team you've built, spending time with your people, enjoying the work you're doing, and when it's tough, you're still enjoying it. So trying to find ways to really enjoy the process, not only the, you know, looking for the end goal.
So Thomas, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
LinkedIn is a good spot to reach out. Yeah, try to be pretty reactive on LinkedIn when I get solicitations. So I think it's a good one. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, hey, well, Thomas, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Alejandro. I appreciate it. I had a great time.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.